The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Taishin Seneca Business Brief, a weekly roundup of business and financial news from China's leading financial magazine, Taishin. Produced by SubChina and featuring conversations with Taishin writers and editors. I'm Ada Shen. Kaiser Guo is traveling this week. In this episode, the Phase 1 trade deal is official, but does it mean anything? Economic growth slows, but Chinese average income rises, surpassing $10,000 US, and Chinese are having fewer babies than we expected, deepening fears of an impending demographic crisis in the fast-aging society. Here's your news. The so-called Phase 1 agreement that seeks a ceasefire for the U.S.-China trade war was inked in Washington last week, but skepticism abounds. For one, most of the hundreds of billions of dollars in tariffs the two sides have imposed will remain. Most of the concessions, which came from the Chinese side, focus on opening market access, protecting intellectual property rights, and Beijing agreeing to increase its purchase of American goods, particularly agricultural products. Some hot takes. The deal means nothing. China won. The U.S. won. Both sides lost. Commentary has been all over the place. But the two sides are talking. In fact, U.S. officials said discussions on a Phase 2 agreement have already begun. China's economic growth dipped to an almost three-decade low in 2019, although the slowdown was accompanied by a more positive milestone. Annual per capita GDP rose above $10,000 U.S. for the first time. Overall GDP expanded 6.1% last year, the weakest pace since 1990, and down from 6.6% in 2018. The number was at the lower end of the government's target range of 6% to 6.5% and reflects a softening in domestic and global demand and the impact of the trade war with the U.S. But annual per capita GDP rose 9.7% to $10,340 last year, marking the first time the value has exceeded $10,000. The indicator, a measure of economic output that takes population into account, provides a better picture of a country's standard of living. According to the latest data, China now ranks 65th out of 186 countries in terms of GDP per capita, according to the IMF. Many economists expect China's overall economy to continue to slow this year. Investment growth is likely to remain sluggish despite policymakers' efforts to support spending, while real estate, traditionally a key driver of activity, will also be subdued as administrative controls over home purchases and funding for developers are maintained. The government has pledged not to unleash monetary stimulus, focusing instead on boosting fiscal spending, especially on infrastructure, to support growth. Speaking of declines, China's birth rate dropped to the lowest level since 1949, and the labor force continued to shrink, in the latest sign of slowing growth prospects for the world's second largest economy. China has struggled to arrest the country's declining birth rate for years, easing its stringent one-child policy in 2013 and allowing each family to have two children in 2016. Still, leaders have resisted calls to fully lift restrictions on the number of babies each family can have, even as the birth rate in 2018 dropped to lows unseen since the turmoil of Mao Zedong's Great Leap Forward. Widespread domestic migration, rapid urbanization, a cutthroat work culture, the high cost of housing and education, and rampant gender discrimination all contribute to the low birth rate and may continue to do so for decades to come, experts said. The trend is expected to cause a demographic crisis in China as a dwindling workforce can no longer support an expanding elderly population, straining pension systems and hospitals, and weakening overall productivity. A second person has died from what authorities say is a new pneumonia-causing virus that originated in the central city of Wuhan and has infected dozens of people. The 69-year-old man died Wednesday while being treated for extensive damage to multiple organs, heart inflammation, abnormal kidney function, and tuberculosis. The disease is thought to be caused by a previously unknown type of coronavirus that may have first spread to humans from animals at a now-shuttered seafood market in Wuhan, where most of the cases have been diagnosed. Further cases have been confirmed in Thailand, Japan, and Singapore, while suspected cases have also occurred in a number of other countries and territories. Coronaviruses are a family of viruses that can cause a variety of ailments, among them the deadly severe acute respiratory syndrome, SARS, and Middle East respiratory syndrome, MERS. However, health officials do not believe the new virus is as dangerous as those, and it remains unclear whether it can spread between people. China released 30,000 tons of pork from national strategic reserves on Friday in the latest effort to ensure the country can afford to keep pork on the menu over the Lunar New Year holiday after African swine fever caused the meat's prices to skyrocket. China's central government and a handful of provinces hold substantial reserves in frozen pork and live hogs in freezers and farms around the country. While too small to guarantee supply, based on Caixin's calculations, China chomps through more than 30,000 tons every 6 hours. They are released in small amounts to put downward pressure on prices. Food prices in China were up 17.4% year-on-year in December, with pork responsible for most of the increase, according to the National Bureau of Statistics, or the NBS. Prices on the popular meat soared 97% year-on-year and accounted for just over half the overall CPI increase of 4.5%. But that surge was down again from a year-on-year pace of 110.2% in November. Since it was first reported in China in the summer of 2018, the deadly pig disease is believed to have killed as many as half of the country's hogs and cut pork production by as much as 30%, causing more than 1 trillion yuan, or $145 billion, of direct losses. Let's turn now to Tanner Brown, head of breaking news at Caixin Global and co-producer of this podcast, to chat about what happened this week. The U.S. and China have just signed a first phase of a trade agreement. Tell us a bit more about how we got here and what is going on.
Right. So last week in Washington, President Trump and China's top trade negotiator, or really trade kind of leader, Liu He, a very prominent Chinese politician who incidentally went to middle school with Xi Jinping, they signed the what's called Phase 1 trade agreement. And this comes after sort of the background is it comes after almost 2 years of a pretty bruising trade war between the two countries, which are the world's two largest economies. And over the course of those 2 years, the main punishments that the countries have put on each other were tariffs, so taxes on imports, exports of the country's goods. And it had come to a point where almost all of the goods that the two countries were shipping to each other were facing taxes, tariffs that were either not in place before the trade war or were greater than before the trade war. There are a lot of other issues that are involved here. For one, this constant news cycle with Trump and China has created a lot of questions for the U.S. Democratic candidates, who have had to either sound strong or stronger on China or have had to sound like they have a better plan than Trump on how to deal with it. So that's number one. Number two, it's created some cheers and some boos at home for Trump's re-election base. You know, it ostensibly hurt farmers, exporters in the U.S. China had put tariffs on sectors in the U.S. that they knew, that Chinese policymakers knew would hurt Trump's supporters. For China's side, it came at a time that was, you know, hurting China's economy, came at a time of record low economic growth for China. So what I'm getting at is, you've got the trade war. We'll talk in a moment about what's in this first phase agreement, but it comes at a time and has an impact on a number of different areas, both for each country's domestic political and economic situations, for their bilateral economic relationship, and for the global economy.
Okay, so what exactly is in the Phase One trade deal? Is it significant?
Well, the media, observers, experts have had a couple of sort of takes or opinions or consensuses on what happened. One is that it's a non-event, that most of the tariffs still remain in place, that the Chinese agreements or concessions are either easily reversible or they could easily be stopped if China gets unhappy in the future, and that there's not a super, super strong enforcement mechanism for what has been agreed upon. So that's one take. Another take is that it's a reasonable first step, and the U.S. came out looking pretty decent. If you believe that China will abide by its commitments, it has agreed to a number of steps, which is billions and millions of, I think it was a $200 billion increase in the purchase of American goods. A huge chunk of that are agricultural goods, which Trump really wanted, again, appeals to his base. They've agreed to crack down on the theft or alleged theft of intellectual properties from American companies. They've agreed to crack down on forced technology transfers, which is when U.S. companies go to China or work with Chinese entities and are forced to hand over some of their sensitive technology or intellectual property. China also agreed to open up its trade and investment barriers in financial industries. So they committed to provide more market access or friendly regulatory treatment for American financial companies like banking, credit rating firms, electronic payments, financial asset management, securities firms, insurance companies, things like that, which was, you know, China has been saying it's going to do for a long time and had taken steps to doing, but this either expedites or broadens those commitments from Beijing, again, ostensibly. What did China get in return? Well, Washington agreed to either lower or halt a pretty small amount of threatened tariffs. So some increase in tariffs were supposed to go through last month, and those are not going to go through. But tariffs on hundreds of billions of dollars worth of goods that the U.S. places on China are going to remain in effect, and on a smaller amount, but a still very large amount of goods that of taxes that Beijing is putting on American goods is going to remain in effect. So I don't want to make a overstatement here, but a lot of the tariff part of this trade war hasn't really changed and remains. And so if you are part of the sectors in either of the countries that was really unhappy with these protectionist measures, these tariffs that were sort of anti-free trade tools, you may not be happy with this part of this phase one, because the tariff situation was an area that didn't really get a lot of change or progress from this phase one.
What do you think is likely to come next?
Well, there are a couple things we know. One, the bulk of what was agreed upon is supposed to begin within 30 days. So some of the commitments that especially China has made are supposed to start within 30 days. Number two, Trump has promised that a phase two, so a step two, which he promised to be more substantial, is going to happen immediately, he said. And Mike Pence, vice president, on Friday said that those discussions had already begun. Really, essentially, no details were given on what that means. So there's talk that this first step was not only just that, a first step, but that a second step or subsequent steps are soon to come. And then finally, I would just say that some observers have noted that if this phase one fails, say China, for instance, doesn't live up to some of its commitments, that it could soon unravel. So that there are, you know, easy ways to see if either country, especially China, who has made more specific commitments, if they're not living up to those agreements of this phase one, then you'd either have an intensification of the trade war, a scrapping of the agreements, some kind of change. So I think what I'm getting at here is, you know, worst case scenario for next step is that what's agreed upon has failed and the trade war resumes and or is intensified.
Tanner, thanks so much for talking with us. I guess we'll see how this phase plays out.
Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you again soon.
And that's it for this week. Thanks for listening. The Taishin Seneca Business Brief is powered by SubChina and is produced by Kaiser Guo and Tanner Brown with stories from the staff of Taishin Global. Thanks, of course, to Ada Shun. Special thanks to Li Xin of Taishin Global and to Spring and Autumn and Ufei for the music. Be sure to check out all the other shows about contemporary China in the expanding Seneca network. And be sure to follow the news from China every day at SubChina. Subscribe to our newsletter at subchina.com. Take care.